So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Jay Baer, who is president of Convince and Convert, plus also a best-selling author. Hi, Jay. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. So, Jay, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and tell us a bit about the work that you do?
You bet. I've been in online digital marketing and customer experience since 1993, so since the very, very beginning. I've had five professional services firms during that time. My most recent and current company is called Convince and Convert, as you mentioned, founded in 2008. We do social media content marketing and customer experience consulting for some of the most interesting brands in the world. We work for Adidas and United Nations and Cisco and Oracle and a bunch of other great brands. We have a media company, Convince and Convert Media, which runs six weekly podcasts, 12 blog posts per week, a daily email, and a bunch of other things. So we try and connect interesting software companies with their future clients. And of course, I write books and give lots of speeches.
Fantastic. And now, talk about, on the subject of books, you've got a new book out called Hug Your Haters, which is, I guess, I don't know if haters is a real millennial word, but I like it anyway.
yeah, it probably is.
I was watching a film the other day where, and somebody kind of said, haters, that's not a word that I grew up with, but it's such a descriptive word.
Yeah.
So you've just published this book, Hug Your Haters. It's called How to Embrace Complaints and Keep Your Customers. Can you tell me about it? I mean, is this the first book you've written on service and complaints and stuff, or why did you write it?
It's my fifth book. It's my fifth book overall. But what we found on the consulting side of our business, Adrian, is that increasingly there is this collision between between marketing and customer care and service. That in many cases, customer service is the new marketing. It's the way the businesses differentiate. And even on a practical matter, when we get to social media and other forms of online customer support, in many cases, marketing has a role to play, or potentially has a role they could be playing in that dynamic, because it is so out there in the open. And thought, you know, it seems to me that people don't quite have this figured out yet. And so I conducted a massive, massive research project with Edison Research, which is one of the world's best attitude collection firms. And we looked at the whole science of complaint. We surveyed thousands and thousands of people and looked at who complains and where they complain and why they complain and how. And we found a lot of really interesting things that form the recommendations and the basis of the book Hug Your Haters, which I like to tell people is really the first modern customer service book, because it's about the things that businesses have to do today. And it's about the revolution of social customer care and even beyond, things like WhatsApp and WeChat and all the other ways that customers want to connect with businesses today that typically most organizations just simply are not doing yet.
Right. I mean, I can completely agree, but I think the interesting thing is right at the very start of the book, right in chapter one, you get to the real nub of the problem, I think. And this is not just a modern problem, but it's a problem that's generally sort of afflicts us as human beings, I think, where you say that you advocate that despite people's fears and worries, that businesses should embrace the complaints.
Absolutely.
And that's a really interesting sort of dynamic, because while some people kind of go and say, yeah, that's fine, but we don't, as people and as businesses, we don't really deal well with complaints. We don't even see them as constructive criticism, even if we try and reframe them. It's all very destructive. I mean,
it's unfortunate. Some of it's just personality, right? You feel like you're being attacked when somebody expresses a negative. And in fact, one of my favorite parts of the book is we actually interviewed some psychiatrists and said, tell me about what happens to you when you're faced with negativity. And it's amazing. Actual brain chemistry changes, significant brain chemistry changes occur that tend to cause you to react in a way that perhaps is not optimal. But you're absolutely right about the value of complaints. Because, look, the most overrated thing in business, in fact, the most overrated thing in life, is praise. Every time somebody says, oh, you're great at this, you're great at that, you're great at this, you're great at that, it feels terrific. It makes you feel so good inside. It's a warm, fuzzy feeling, but it teaches you nothing. You learn nothing from praise. You learn everything from criticism. Mm-hmm. Negative feedback is the petri dish of improvements. And while there are certainly many financial reasons to hug your haters and be better at service, and I go through those in great detail in the book, the sort of free market research, learn about your business, learn how to be better, is one that most organizations simply overlook entirely.
So here's the thing that I think you'll love is that in a previous piece that that I've written on my own blog, because I have a real interest in psychology and neuroscience and all that sort of type of stuff as well. There's a piece I did which was called the longest lasting emotions in customer service or customer experience. And it's interesting enough, it's the ones that are associated with loss and uncertainty and fear and disappointment yeah. rather than joy and surprise and things.
Absolutely.
And I think it's interesting because it's actually, you can link that almost to an existential survival instinct.
Yeah, it's very much a fight or flight kind of response. It's exactly. Same psychology, absolutely. Yeah.
So anyway, in the book, I mean, going on into the book, I mean, you start to splice and dice different types of complainers, and you talk about on-stage and off-stage haters as different types of complainers. I mean,
yes,
that's an interesting way of explaining it. Can you explain the difference, and do we need to tackle them differently?
Yes, we do. It was interesting, when we did the research, we didn't have any thesis about that. We just said, you know, what's happening out there. And what sure. we discovered in the data was that there really are two main different groups of complainers. And the offstage haters are slightly older, slightly less technology savvy. And the reason we call them offstage is that they complain in private. So they complain on the phone and via email. The other group are the onstage haters. They are slightly younger, slightly more technology savvy, and they complain in public, mostly social media, review websites, discussion boards and forums, etc.
Right.
The demographic differences are not massive. They're noticeable, but they're not terribly important. The biggest difference is in expectations. So right. for offstage haters, people who complain with what we might consider to be legacy channels, they expect and anticipate a response about 90% of the time. And I'm sure that matches up with your own experiences.
Yeah.
If you call a company, you expect the phone to be answered. If you email a company, you expect to get an email back 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
However, the onstage haters, the people who are complaining in public, don't necessarily expect an answer at all. In fact, only 47% of onstage haters expect or anticipate businesses to get back to them.
Right.
This is partially because most businesses don't get back to them, right? I mean, they've been trained to not expect it because it typically never happens.
Sure.
So when you do, the great opportunity for business is to hug those onstage haters. Because when you do get back to them in social media, a review site, TripAdvisor, etc., something like that, or a discussion board or forum, it blows their mind and wins their heart because they don't anticipate that you will get back to them. Excuse me. So then they hear back and they're like, wow, I can't believe you actually listened. I can't believe you answered me. And it has a material impact on customer advocacy as a result.
And it's interesting because I was speaking to a friend and colleague the other day, and he was saying he actually goes down when he researches a business online, he goes down all the different reviews and looks for the bad ones to see how a business has responded, because he says that's a great sign of actually the sort of business you're dealing with when you actually see how they respond to things.
Oh, no question. I mean, a lack of response is a response, right? It's a response that says, we don't care about you very much.
Sure.
So these businesses, and let me just say, especially when it comes to review sites like that, it's not as if companies accidentally don't answer. They willingly, purposely, and strategically do not answer. They say, oh, we don't get involved in websites like that. Most of those customers are just lying. You know, they just completely ignore those kind of reviews and review websites as an actual defined operational component of their business.
Yeah.
Which to me seems very short-sighted, because the customer service is in fact a spectator sport in those environments. And so you're saying, we're going to let people complain,
yeah.
and then we're not going to answer those complaints. Therefore, those complaints just accumulate and become more and more true. We're not even going to give ourselves the opportunity to respond, which seems very, very short-sighted to me. And of course, the data bears that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's also another sort of type of, you talk about on-stage and off-stage and different strategies that are required to deal with those different type of if you like, haters or complainers. But I also have been, there's another sort of category which I always sort of kick around called the silent complaints. And it's not the ones that are done in private or the ones that are done in public. But you know that sort of, that phenomenon of silent complainer, like I think we've all done it, where we've gone to a restaurant and it's never been quite good enough for us to compliment them, or never been quite bad enough for us to complain, but enough bad enough for us to resolve never to go there again. and also to tell a whole bunch of friends and family about it. How would you, I mean, do you address that in the book as well? Kind of those type of complaints?
Absolutely. Yes, no question about it. And in fact, the thing about complaints mathematically that make them so valuable is that they're actually quite rare. 95% of your unhappy customers never complain in a way that the business will find. It's that 5% that are actually going out of their way to tell you what you could be do better. That's the group that is so valuable. And you can be sure that if somebody goes out of their way to actually complain in any channel, phone, email, social media, etc., that same circumstance has, of course, afflicted a bunch of other customers who just chose not to go about letting you know.
Sure. So, Jay, that's all brilliant. And, yeah, I mean, it's every business we should embrace these complaints and actually learn from them and do it both publicly and privately, because we can all see the benefits of it. But in order to sort of take some of the ways that you're advocating that they should do this and make it kind of more real for people, can you give us a couple of examples of firms or brands that are using the sort of approach that you're advocating and sort of what they're doing and how they're benefiting to make this real?
Sure. Sure. So the actual advice in the book is to answer every complaint in every channel every time.
Right.
To answer everybody. And I think philosophically, if you care about customer experience and you care about service, we have to answer customers in the venues that the customers prefer, not only the venues that the business prefers. Mm-hmm. And so if your customers want to interact with you in WhatsApp, then you should do that. And what I hear, and I'm sure what you hear too, Adrian, is, well, we don't have the resources to do that, to which I say that is categorically untrue. You have the resources, you just choose to not deploy them in that way.
Sure.
And I've been in business for more than 20 years now, 25 years, and I remember when I first got into business, we didn't really have email, not the way we do now.
No.
And then email was invented, and people said, and I know this is true because I was there, well, how are we going to answer all these emails? Who's going to do that? We don't have the resources to answer all these emails, these electronic messages from customers. But boy, we sure figured it out. We sure figured out where those resources could come from when we realized how much customers wanted to use those vehicles. And the same thing is happening today.
Yeah.
We have to change how we apply our resources internally in order to actually achieve the kind of customer service and customer advocacy benefits that the Hug Your Haters formula assigns you. Now, there's lots of examples in the book, and that's why I wrote it this way. Big companies, small companies, U.S. companies, global companies, B2B companies, B2C companies that are doing this really, really well. One of my favorite examples, I think, that you will appreciate.
Okay.
Is from Le Pain Quotidien, and they're a chain of bakery cafes. You know those guys? There's about 220 locations. They're based in Brussels.
Yeah.
Locations in the U.S., Northeast, and also California. And when their new director of customer experience, Erin Pepper is her name, when she started there probably 2 years ago now, she said, my goal as the director of customer experience is to triple the number of complaints that we get. Think about that, right? Yeah, that is so counterintuitive, yet so brilliant, right? Because she understands that every complaint is an...
They probably scared the living bejesus out of kind of a whole bunch.
Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine? But it's so brilliant because that is the raw material that you need to get better. And so she put in practice a lot of policies that really encourage customers to provide feedback at every touch point.
Nice.
But she does another thing that's really great. So when they get negative feedback, and for them as a restaurant chain, it's typically in the U.S. places like Yelp, TripAdvisor, Urban Spoon, the restaurant review websites.
Yeah.
And so when they get that, she answers everybody back in public, as you should.
Uh-huh.
And she says, we're terribly sorry, and thanks for the feedback, and we'll make sure, and all that. She does it well. But then what she does, in many cases, is she waits a couple of hours, and then she messages that person back in private, using some sort of private messaging function behind the scenes. And she says, you know, I've been thinking. And you are a particularly perceptive customer. You have a gift for this. You see things that other customers simply do not see.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do, with your permission, I'd like to send you 2 gift cards a month. And with each of those gift cards, I'd like you to visit a different Le Pain Quotidien location. And upon the conclusion of your visit, I'd like you to click this link and fill out this detailed survey of your experiences, because you understand what we're trying to achieve here.
Mm-hmm.
And it totally works. She has like 150 of these secret shoppers now working for her, helping them improve the very, very small things that make the difference between very good and great. She turned hate into help.
Yeah, sure.
And the only cost of that program is gift cards, which I think is truly impressive.
And I bet you 150 gift cards is probably a lot cheaper than a corporate mystery shopping program.
Oh, by you know, yes, by an order of magnitude, or perhaps two.
Brilliant. That's great. I love that. That's. I mean, that's really smart. I mean, it's like bring it on, but really shaking up the organization as well.
Oh, I'm sure there were panic in the hallways when she started.
Excellent. So, do you have another one like that you can share with us? You know, just as that's a great example. Have you got any more?
Well, I think one of my favorite examples in the whole world, and one that you may be familiar with, is KLM, the Royal Dutch Airlines. Yeah. You know, airlines are in a tough spot.
Yeah.
You know, they have so many points of failure, so many things that can frustrate a customer on a daily basis. And many of them have gotten quite a bit better in service in general. But I think KLM remains the leader. They just really believe it, right? They understand that customer service is marketing. And the story that I tell in the book is how they got there. And it wasn't some sort of corporate epiphany where they said, hey, our opportunity is to be better at service than the other airlines, and let's do that, and that'll be part of our brand. It wasn't that at all. It was a volcano.
Yeah.
You may remember a few years ago, they had the huge volcanic eruption in Iceland.
Yeah,
I'm not going to try to attempt to pronounce the volcano because my Icelandic is rusty. But that ash cloud covered all of continental Europe, and nobody could fly. It was crazy. And so they had thousands and thousands and thousands of stranded passengers calling them and emailing them and tweeting them, and they said, what are we going to do? And so they had an emergency meeting, and they said, well, we've got two options. We can either try and triage this and answer the most acute problems or the people with the most loyalty points and do it that way, or we can find a way to answer everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But let's remember that if we choose the latter, if we decide to answer everybody, we can never go back. We can never not do that, because you can't very well say to your customers 3 weeks down the line, we provide amazing customer service during times of volcano, right? You can't do that, right? So they said, okay, and fortunately they had the resources, because pilots couldn't fly, and flight attendants couldn't attend, and baggage handlers couldn't handle. And so they just put everybody at headquarters and said, okay, grab a laptop. And so they just answered every single question. And that was the genesis of their program that they then continued on with. And today, KLM answers some 60,000 customer questions and problems per week just in social media.
Sure.
They do it 24 hours a day. They provide service in 14 different languages. So if you tweet them at 3 a.m. in Turkish, they'll be back to you by 3:15 in Turkish, which is truly remarkable. Last year, they sold accidentally $25 million worth of airplane tickets, because they're just interacting with so many customers. They don't have a revenue goal. They're not even in the revenue business. This is purely a service department. Mm-hmm. But they're so good at it that they actually are revenue neutral, because they're actually out there interacting with customers fast, and they answer everybody.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, I know about KLM, but I didn't know that level of detail of the story and stuff. So that's amazing. No, there's two really good stories. So here's my thing. I mean, not wanting to go further into it, Jay, because I do actually want to try and help you sell some books and just get the book out there and things. But so here's the thing. So if I was to say to you, what would be your top tips for a business or an executive that said, we just need to get better at this? I mean, is it as simple as put in place that answer every complaint in every channel every time? Is that basically the bar that we're setting them, or what would you say to them?
So if you want to get great at customer service, there's multiple levels to that. There's a strategic level, which says, we believe as an organization that customer service is the new marketing. Mm-hmm. That if we put more resources into this, it will generate more revenue, either because people want to do business with us because they know they're going to be taken care of,
sure,
but perhaps more importantly, our customer retention will go up, which makes us money. So you have to believe it strategically. And then culturally, you have to deploy an atmosphere of genuine hospitality, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just about spreadsheets and coverage and resources and software, although those are all really important. It's about the fact that you believe in the primacy of the customer, that you believe that you will do whatever it takes to make that customer satisfied. And what's amazing, and the stat that I quote in the book is from Forrester, is that 80% of businesses say that they deliver superior customer service.
Yeah.
8% of their customers agree.
Yeah.
So almost every company in the world says, "Oh yeah, we're good at customer service," but they're not. They're absolutely not. And so that's the sort of strategic and cultural level. You have to really embrace this and commit to it. On the operations side, it does come down to software and policies and understanding. Okay, if we're going to commit to answering everybody, how are we going to do that? How are we going to find everybody? Who's going to answer? How long is it going to take us to answer? What happens when we glean insights out of those customer complaints? Where do those insights go? How do they get circulated through the organization so that petri dish for improvement is actually cultured?
Sure.
There's lots of operations things. And then on the actual execution sort of tactical side, I think my favorite tip, and there's lots and lots of tips in the book, there's whole worksheets and posters and other things, but
yeah.
My favorite tip is Jay Baer's rule of reply only twice. And my rule of reply only twice says that you never, ever, 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 Adrian, reply to a customer more than twice in a public forum, because it's either a waste of time and or you get sucked into a vortex of negativity. So let me give you an example.
Okay.
Somebody goes on your Facebook page and says, "We love you." You answer back, "We love you too, thanks." They come back and say, "No, we really love you." You can answer back, "No, we really love you too, thanks." If they come back a third time, they're such a super fan, they just walk away, because now you're just wasting resources.
Yes.
The more common scenario, of course, is in a negative context.
Yeah.
So somebody goes to your Facebook page or Yelp or whatever and says, "We hate you." You answer back, "We're terribly sorry, we've disappointed you, how can we help?" They answer back, "No, we really hate you." You answer back, "This appears to be an issue that probably requires a broader conversation. It'd be great if you could call me or email me and we'll talk it through." They answer back a third time, "I don't want to call you or email you. You're the worst company ever. You can't help me in any medium." Now, what most companies do is they answer a third time and then a fourth and a fifth because they're trying to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
My rule says after you've answered twice, you just walk away.
Yeah.
Because you have accomplished what you set out to accomplish. You have given this customer, this hater, not just one but two chances. You have given them multiple opportunities to contact you in a reasonable fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And continuing to get into this tit for tat does suck you into this vortex of negativity. You are never going to win. But most importantly, you have done the bigger and more important component, which is you've shown all the onlookers, all the spectators, what kind of company you are.
Yeah.
You've demonstrated that you listen. You've demonstrated that you care. You've demonstrated that you'll reach out. You've demonstrated that you're rational. You do not need to wrestle every customer to the ground because, again, this is a spectator sport. The more important audience is the onlookers, more so than the individual customer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it becomes a reductive thing, really.
100%.
So that's brilliant. That's really useful stuff, Jay. So is there anything else that you'd like to mention about the book before I ask you my final question?
So as I mentioned, the book is very intentionally written so that there's examples for all businesses, big, small, business-to-business, business-to-consumer. So if you have customers, you'll find examples in the book that really resonate with you. Mm-hmm. Also, every copy of the book includes a poster. It's called The Hatrix,
okay,
which is the analysis of the different types of haters. What happens if you answer a complaint on a discussion board? What happens if you don't? What happens if you answer a phone call? What happens if you don't? So all the different data that we found in the research and what it means for your business and how to handle it day to day is all contained on one poster, which is included in the book, which you can pull out of the book, put it on your wall, keep it on your desk as a reference guide. And I think that's pretty fantastic. And I'm so glad that my publisher allowed me to put the poster in the book. It's pretty cool.
That's cool. And unfortunately, because I got a pre-distribution pre-sale copy.
Yeah, you do not have the poster.
I don't have the poster, man.
Okay, we'll fix that. We'll fix that for you.
So anyway, it brings me to my last kind of question, which I think you probably already answered already, but I'm going to ask it all again. And the question is this. Is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug I think you might have already answered it, but you can have another go if you like.
Another go at it. I would love people to buy the book. I think you will find it very, very useful in your businesses. You can get the book all the places and ways that books can be gotten. However, the best place to get it, at least for now, is at hugyourhaters.com.
Perfect.
Because I will ship it to you for free, and I'll give you all kinds of special free stuff that you can't get other places, including if you buy a few copies, amazing limited edition I Love Haters socks, which are truly spectacular. So go to hugyourhaters.com, check out the socks. You'll love it.
Brilliant. Jay, that's been great. Thank you very much. And I'll make sure I get this all edited up and linked up, and we'll do a bit of shouting from the rooftops about Hug Your Haters.
I really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Let me send me a note when it comes out, and we'll make sure to promote it in social media on our side.
Fantastic.